Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and today's conversation explores transformation at a deeper level. Not just mindset shifts, but the subconscious patterns that quietly shape our confidence, behaviour and relationships and a sense of self. I'm joined by the incredible Nida Said, award-winning mental health therapist, clinical hypnotherapist, CAM transformational coaching specialist, NLP master practitioner, and the founder of Luminous Transformational Coaching. Nida works with individuals who feel stuck, overwhelmed, or limited by patterns they can't quite explain, helping them release past wounds, dismantle limiting beliefs, and reconnect with their inner strength. Nida, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. And I'm super, super excited about the conversation that we are going to have today. I'm sure the audience will be really inspired by it.
Yes, I'm sure they will be. So let's start. When someone first does come to you feeling stuck or emotionally overwhelmed, what do you most often uncover beneath the surface?
So, you know, Belinda, I have been, you know, running my practice for the last 6 years, and mostly people contact me with anxiety, panic attacks, you know, just some sort of symptoms. But the first session is mainly focusing on what's going on and where do you think it's coming from, and I just let them talk. But the root cause is always, always some sort of trauma. Whether it's the big trauma, you know, the small trauma, it's something that happened and they just feel stuck. And that's why in my practice, I don't just look at the present. I drill down towards the past. Where and when did it start?
And that's the main aspect. We have to get to the root cause. And it's such an important distinction, isn't it? The real work begins when you gently trace it back to where it first took root. And there's something powerful about giving people the space to connect those dots and finally understand why they've been feeling stuck. So many people understand their patterns intellectually, yet still repeat them. Why doesn't awareness alone create transformation?
So, you know, the thing is, patterns, they're actually saved in your subconscious belief, in your subconscious mind, and your subconscious mind controls you 95%. And the reason why I'm saying controls you is you're repeating a cycle over and over again, and you have no idea why you're repeating it. For example, you know, if someone says, I keep attracting the same type of men, or I keep attracting the same type of women, or in a relationship, I'm having the same type of issues, because you're doing continually over and over again what's imprinted in your subconscious mind. If in your subconscious mind, you know, you have to understand that even pain is stored there, your emotions, everything you have been through is stored there. And as long as you don't transform it, you will keep carrying the baggage.
And thank you for sharing that valuable insight, because that's so important. It's incredibly insightful. What you're describing really explains why people feel trapped in patterns they consciously want to change. And sometimes those are transgenerational patterns. It's not about willpower, it's about what's been wired beneath awareness. And until that deeper layer is addressed, the same story just keeps replaying in different forms. So how does the subconscious mind influence our behavior more than we realize?
So, you know, the subconscious mind is actually where all the actions and all the belief systems and everything is just saved. So you can consciously think about anything that you would like to do. For example, people say, I'm going to quit smoking, or I'm going to quit sugars, or I'm going to start living a healthy lifestyle. It's a conscious decision. But if in your subconscious mind there is a belief that I'm a failure, I'm not good enough. I cannot let this go. It's contradictory, but at the same time, your subconscious mind has the power of controlling your conscious because your subconscious mind controls everything 95%. And that's why it's important that if you decide to make some sort of change in your life, or you would like to achieve some specific goals, that you don't just make that conscious decision, but also drill deeper into what is it subconsciously? What do I really believe? What am I telling myself when no one is around, when no one is watching? When I look into the mirror and I look into my eyes, what do I see? Who is there? What is this person? What does this person believe about this specific area? And you know, when you're going to ask yourself these questions, you will be getting answers that will really surprise you because those answers will be opposite of what you consciously keep telling yourself. And this is why affirmations don't work. And sometimes affirmations start even working against you because subconsciously, you're running a complete different program.
Absolutely, and that's such a powerful way of explaining it. You're really highlighting the gap between what we say and what we want and what we actually believe about ourselves underneath it all. And that quiet moment you describe when you look in the mirror and no one else is there, that's often where the real truth lies. And I love how clearly you frame that when the subconscious program is running the opposite belief, an affirmation can feel like a lie, and the mind pushes back harder, doesn't it? And that's why the deeper work matters, bringing the hidden story into the light so that change isn't just something you repeat, it becomes something you actually believe. But of course, all of us, we've been through this where there's those limiting beliefs, and limiting beliefs often begin early in life. How do they quietly follow us into that adulthood?
See, it starts with childhood, painful experiences, the self-talk, self-belief. Have you been criticized over and over again? How people judge you, how people perceive you, and all these noises around you, or all these things that have been said about you, how have you perceived it? See, if you perceive critic, if you perceive and own it as well, if someone says you're too fat, or if someone says you will never make it, or you're not good enough, people say lots of things.
Of
But
course.
if you really perceive it and own those words, it starts becoming a limiting belief. Because remember, everything that you're doing, you're seeing, and it's happening, your subconscious mind keeps recording it. And the more stronger it becomes, the more it becomes an anchor for your mind, and the stronger that limiting belief becomes for you. So yes, it does start with childhood and painful experiences, but also repetition. How many times have you perceived something negative, accepted, owned it?
Absolutely. And again, I love how clearly you've framed that. It's powerful because it really brings it back to responsibility and that self-awareness. I often speak about self-awareness and acceptance, and it's not just what was said, it's how it was absorbed, repeated, and eventually believed. And once that belief settles in, it can quietly shape an entire life without someone even realizing it. And there's people that are high functioning, like the high functioning individuals can appear confident externally, but they feel anxious internally. So a lot of these people do actually distract themselves and have this image, a persona that they want to display, but there's something else happening deeper inside. What's happening psychologically in those moments?
So, they put their worth in the achievement, it's tied to the achievement. Every time they get recognition, every time they achieve something, it means they're doing something good. So they get completely disconnected from what's happening within them, but more what's happening around them. They're driven by fear, not joy. Also, these people that, that's why they say the more successful you get, the more lonelier you become. Because you master suppressing emotions to function how the society wants you to function.
Absolutely.
Also, the nervous system is always on. There is no moment that the nervous system relaxes. And recently, 2 3 months ago, I've been through something, and that just shaked my nervous system. And I just realized that regulating your nervous system should be a key. That should be the first thing. That should be the priority. And I just was wondering and thinking about all these people that go through traumatic events or just some sort of shocking event, and the nervous system is all over the place, and they have no idea how to regulate it. And it was for me a wake-up call that this is something that the society needs as well, understanding the importance of how to regulate your nervous system. Now, with people who are high functioning, they're completely disconnected from how to regulate it. The nervous system is always alert, it's always on. And on top of that, most importantly, success doesn't mean that old wounds are healed. You're still carrying those baggages. It's just that you're not looking at it until there will be a point that you will collapse and you will have to look into it.
I totally agree. And it's extremely important and a very honest reflection, by the way, but extremely important. And what I feel is being highlighted here is something so many high achievers experience but rarely admit to as well. And that success can mask dysregulation rather than heal it. And when the nervous system never truly switches off, achievement becomes survival, not fulfillment. And I'm glad that you highlighted also the fact that, of course, we do hear this, the more successful people are, the lonelier they feel, because they are not only disconnecting from within, but they're disconnecting from those around them as well, the emotional attachments. I think it's true, it's very important that we regulate our nervous system because that is the foundation, and that feels like a crucial shift in the conversation around performance and well-being as well. But thank you so much so far, Nida. Such valuable insight. We're going to pause briefly for a short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. Stay with us, we'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
The cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, Our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and today I am in conversation with Nida Saeed as we explore subconscious healing, emotional breakthroughs, and how deep transformation really happens. Welcome back, Nida.
Hi.
So you integrate NLP and hypnotherapy into your work. How do these methods create change at a deeper level?
So I mostly work on the subconscious mind because, as I said, 95% of what you do and everything is imprinted in the subconscious mind. So that's why I use these modalities. I mainly focus, tap into the subconscious mind, do the reprogramming with the client so that we can create new belief systems. Another thing that the reason that I have different modalities or I use a combination is because not every modality is suitable for every client. For example, one client is really happy with processing traumas, everything through EMDR, and wants to do after that some EFT and, you know, moves on. Other client prefers to go only for hypnotherapy, but it also depends on how a client responds to these modalities. And that's why I do a combination to see how a client is responding. Because again, when someone contacts me and wants change or wants to heal, wants to move on, I always say I'm not going to just look at the now, the present. I will have to dig deeper to the root cause. So I will be working on your subconscious mind with you.
Absolutely. And I can totally relate to that because that resonates with my methodology as well. And the eclectic process of using those different modalities, I think that makes so much sense because you're not forcing a one size fits all method. You're meeting the client or patient where they are, and the way you're describing it feels both practical and compassionate, and you're focused on the root, but you're also flexible in how you get there based on what helps that individual feel safe, responsive, and able to process. And I think what really lands there strongly is your clarity. You're not just offering symptom management, which is really important. You're guiding people into real change by working with the deeper beliefs driven by previous patterns that we spoke about earlier. And I think that's really important. Now, how much of our current behavior is subconscious programming rather than conscious choice?
95%. And you will be surprised. I always tell people to look at the patterns, look at what you're falling back to, look at, you know, what's repeating, look at your good behaviors, your bad behaviors, your self-talk, your belief system, do journaling, lots of self-reflection, you know, because these techniques will help you with seeing that you're doing something over and over again. And you will notice that it's coming from subconscious programming. Also, people that are not able to have good wealth or, you know, have more month than money left, have more responsibilities, but they just feel like they keep working and working, and finances, it's just they just can't save money. It's all about the mindset. It's all about the subconscious belief. What do you believe? if you have been a part of a family in which you have seen your parents struggling for money, then your belief will be that you will have to struggle as well to provide for your family. So even if there is a solution, you will not be able to see that.
Yes, I've come across this myself so many times with people I've worked with, and it's actually understanding that relationship they have with, say, finances, or but mainly it comes down to the relationship they have with themselves. And I think what you're saying is such a strong point, because you're bringing awareness again to what people normalize. And when struggle becomes familiar, and that's what we're talking about, those familiar patterns, it can start to feel inevitable. And that's what you've shared is really powerful. And what you're encouraging is reflection, not blame again. And when someone begins to notice the repetition rather than just live inside it, that's often the first real shift. And I think that's the thing, isn't it, Nida? People are, it's knowing this, sometimes they can become self-aware, they can become self-accepting, but they just don't know how to shift that thought and that mindset. But this is where they have to understand that sadly we don't have a magic wand. They have to meet us halfway and actually do the work with us and practice, because it does take practice, doesn't it? So
And there is another thing that I would like to add to it. You know, to be very honest with you, I see also that people have the awareness, but then there is a huge gap between having the awareness and taking action. There is hesitation. I completely understand that. It's scary to talk about yourself. It's scary to talk about your own flaws, or feeling that, you know, you have to now tell someone you do not know about what you're going through. And I completely understand that. But there is one specific thing that I just do not agree with, and that's having the awareness and not taking the responsibility. And majority does that. Have the awareness. I know I need support. I know I need help. I know I need this. I know this. I know that. But not taking action. And you know, the thing is, there is enough support around the globe. Now, therapists, coaches, they're even offering, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, free consultation. Get to know a coach, get to know a therapist, take action. No one else is going to come and help you. You will have to take action. You will need to show yourself to those who can help you so that they can then tell you if they can help you or refer you to someone else who can. We live now in a society in which there is lots of awareness, and, you know, people are talking about it, and some people have acknowledged that they need that support. But then where responsibility and action comes in, that's where they stop, and they just fall back into the old toxic cycle, and it's just costing them themselves.
And I think this is it. And some people, because it's familiar, they feel comfortable in that place, don't they? But what you're explaining is such an important distinction. That awareness is powerful, but without action, it becomes almost comforting. Like we've done the work when we actually haven't moved, you know? Yeah. And what you're saying about responsibility, really, again, it lands with me, because growth requires courage, and at some point someone has to decide they're ready to step out of the cycle, even if it feels uncomfortable. But I've found this, and you may have found this with your clients as well, when people have come to you and, you know, they say, but you don't understand what I've gone through, and you know, I've had a lot of trauma in my life. And it's not always easy to forget those things. No one's saying to forget those things. And trauma doesn't always, it's not always dramatic or obvious either, is it? Sometimes it's within our body. What I'm trying to ask you is, how do subtle experiences shape the nervous system long term?
So first of all, do understand, it's not about what happened. It's more about how you responded to it, how your body responded to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, small repeated experiences, for example, criticism, feeling ignored, or never feeling good enough, slowly shapes how a person sees themselves. And over time, this message can become, I'm not good enough, I don't matter, I have to keep proving myself. And quietly, this starts lowering your confidence. And at some point, it's going to shatter your self-esteem as well. So it's not always about the big events, or you need to go through something huge, shocking to be able to say that you have experienced it as a trauma. One simple example, ghosting. It's very common, very common. We live in a time in which dating has become funny.
Yeah.
It has become to be on a dating app is just like being on any other app, and you know, see if you click and have fun, and then boom, someone ghosts the other person. Now, this person ghosted you, whether you're a man or a woman, the person that ghosted you, that person moved on, that person is now looking for someone else, or thought, you know what, I am not confident enough to say this is not working. So that person moves on. You, who were emotionally invested, you might say, okay, this person ghosted me, block, move on. I can, you know, do things. I can move on with my life. I can do whatever I want to do. But when you will start dating again, or when you will start using that app again, or any app, you will feel some sort of sensation within your body. And your body will tell you not to go there. There will be fear, basically traumatized. It might be that you have just talking to this person for a week, but ghosting, it's something that's has become very common right now. Very, very common. And it's the impact of ghosting on people these days, it's huge, because people are already very sensitive, because they're busy with, you know, comparing themselves to celebrities, or comparing themselves to the people that they see on socials. And now all of a sudden, someone that said they like them ghosted them. So you might think you have moved on, but this could be a trauma response as well. Just simply ghosting. Ghosting has become normal. But it is a huge. Another thing, if you try, which is again a common thing, but people don't really understand that this can be triggering, or this can be traumatic at some point as well. If you're trying to lose weight and you're trying multiple weight management supplements, and on top of that, you've also tried to, you know, lose weight through medication, and you're just forcing yourself to quickly lose weight, and it's just not happening, at some point you will tell yourself, you know, I'm just not good enough. It's just not working. Nobody is going to tell you. It could be because of your cortisol level. You're just pressurizing yourself. You're just being too hard on yourself.
And both examples are so real and so relatable. Thank you, Nida. Because people dismiss something like ghosting as small. And I'm glad you brought it up. It is a real huge problem. And what you're saying really challenges the idea that only big events matter. But sometimes it's the subtle rejections that leaves the deepest imprint. And again, that's such a compassionate point you brought up. When something isn't working, like the weight issue that you were talking about, people often turn the blame inward instead of looking at the pressure they're under. And what you're describing shifts the focus from I'm not good enough to what's happening in my body right now. And that changes perspective alone. That change in perspective alone can soften so much self-judgment, can't it? And I think that, again, those words that we say to ourselves are really important. I think people don't realize the impact that it makes on the chemical releases from our brain, the cortisol levels, yeah. It can completely change your body shape, let alone, and the way you look, the way you respond, and even your internal organs. People don't realize the impact it has on your health. Yeah. And going forward, I mean, in your experience, what blocks people most from stepping fully into their potential?
It's scary to step out of your comfort zone. It's scary to feel that you have to let go of control and let go of what you know.
Yes.
And I feel this is a huge, huge reason that people are just scared to, you know, step into their authentic selves. And I notice that a lot with people with low self-esteem or people coming from dysfunctional families. And it really breaks my heart. But with obviously work and with long-term work and with guidance and support, obviously I can help them out of it, but they cannot see their potential at all.
So sad, isn't it, when
they can't see it
because of those familiar patterns and beliefs that they've been holding on to, and those limiting beliefs we spoke about before. Yeah. And what you're saying there is incredibly moving, because stepping out of what feels familiar, even when it's unhealthy, can feel more frightening than staying stuck. And when someone can't see their own potential, having someone hold that vision for them the way you're describing can be life-changing. And that kind of guidance isn't just about weight or behavior, it's about helping someone feel worthy enough to believe change is possible. So what role does nervous system regulation play in confidence and resilience?
So nervous system, as I mentioned before, is the number one. The reason is emotional freedom happens when your body no longer reacts to the present as if it's in the past. So in simple words, if the body feels safe, the mind can change. If the body feels unsafe, it will resist change. So we can be consciously thinking about millions of things that we can do and how to move on and what's okay and what's not okay. But if your body is continually in fight and flight mode, or if your body is just stiff and numb and you know, it's just as if something is about to happen, it doesn't feel safe, you will not be able to change anything.
And it's a grounded explanation you've given. You're bringing it back to something fundamental, safety. A lot of people use that anxiety and fear for safety, to protect them. And if the body is still bracing for danger, or no amount of logic or positive thinking will create real change. I feel what you're saying reframes growth as regulation first and transformation second. So Neetha, thank you so much for all your valuable insight there. We're going to take another short commercial break, again with a word from our sponsors. We'll return in just a moment.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and today I'm joined by the incredible Neetha Saeed. Now, Neetha, for someone afraid to revisit painful memories, how can healing feel safe rather than overwhelming?
So we only, or as a therapist, I only am going to talk or ask you to talk about something if you're ready for it. When you start your healing journey, I know lots of people hesitate because they think, oh my gosh, I have to think about this or I have to talk about that. But that's not it. When you start your healing journey, first thing that we do is you talk about what you feel okay to talk about. You tell what you feel safe to tell. And this is not just with me. This is with any therapist, any coach that you're going to work with. Always keep in mind, it's completely up to you what you feel comfortable, safe to talk about. Then once you feel safe, that's when you will automatically feel ready to talk about the painful memories. Because you will know this person that you're talking to is not going to judge you. It's going to understand you. It's going to help you, support you. But to do that, first you need to build that connection with the person that's there to help you and support you. So do not be hesitant just because you think I have to be revisiting all those painful memories. Sometimes you don't even have to, you know. Sometimes you would just need to do some EFT sessions and you will be able to release that hurt from your body. And that's it. Sometimes just one clinical hypnotherapy session or two, three, and it's gone. And simple NLP technique. You do not know what's going to work for you and how much you have to share and you can share unless you start your healing journey. But most importantly, start with someone that you intuitively feel that you can share what you want to share. And always remember, you only need to tell what you want to tell.
And healing isn't about forcing someone back into pain. And I think that's where a lot of people misunderstand what therapy is as well. And it's about creating enough safety that they choose to go there when they're ready. And that shift alone can make starting feeling far less intimidating. And I think this is it. You're starting that journey with your therapist or counselor or, you know, coach, whoever you're working with. It's important to know that you have that control of your mindset. You choose what you want to share. Trust and intuition matter as well. You have to go with that rapport and that gut feeling, and the connection has to feel right. And when people realize they're in control of what they share, and when they share it, the fear, it kind of subsides, doesn't it? And healing starts with safety, not that pressure that so many people that I'm sure you've come across and I certainly have come across, they feel that pressure of going into therapy. They're never sure. They're never they're very reluctant. So it gives them that element of safety as well. And what do you believe is missing from the wider mental health conversation today?
Educating about different modalities and different support system. That's what I feel is lacking. Those who are open for support or open for therapy and coaching, they see a therapist, but they have no idea which modality will be offered and what the therapist will be working on. Is it just the present? You know, is it just, is this someone that's going to only do some coaching to help me get a specific career? So what's missing is what I feel like is more clarity and guidance about different psychological modalities so that people understand what they will be clearly getting out of those sessions. Because what I've noticed is majority is disappointed in therapy, the ones that are, or in coaching. That's the category that mostly goes not to the wrong therapist, but to a wrong modality. That's just not the right fit for what they're looking for.
It's a valuable observation. When people don't understand the different modalities, they can walk in with one expectation and experience. And I don't know if you've come across this neither, but I've come across this so often where people are telling me what they need as therapeutic, yeah. You know, experience, and they'll say, oh no, I need CBT because I've read about it and I know that's what I need. But of course, it's really important that what you're highlighting is the need for transparency and education so people can choose support that truly aligns with what they're seeking rather than feeling let down by the process itself. So,
this is the part where I would say book your 30 minutes or 40 minutes consultation and ask which modalities will you be using? And what does this modality mean? And if the therapist or the coach can't go into details because it's 30 or 40 minutes only, what you can do is ask which modalities would fit in your situation. Then do your own research. Educate yourself.
Yes, yes.
You know, just start doing that. Have some self-education. And if you're not sure which method is going to work for you, that's absolutely fine. Then again, book that free consultation with a therapist or a coach and tell them, I have no idea what's going to work. This is the summary of what I'm going through. What do you suggest? And just, you know, don't go shopping, but just contact top three that you make a list of top three that you feel is the right therapist or a coach for you. Send them an email or book a 30-minute consultation, ask them, talk to them, and then choose one and start your healing journey.
And Nidia, that's such grounded advice. You don't have to have all the answers before you reach out. And just clarity about what you're experiencing. Let the professional guide you from there. And it's not about shopping around endlessly, like you said. Just choose what resonates, like the first three or something. I mean, I always tell people go with what feels right. If there's a rapport, I always tell people if they're making queries, please do speak to other therapists and see if where you have that rapport. It's really important that you build that relationship with your coach or therapist or counselor, whoever you're speaking to. And for listeners who may not yet have access to therapy, what small but powerful steps can they begin with?
Self-awareness. Start journaling. Journaling is my number one.
Because
your mind doesn't know the difference whether you're telling it to someone or you're just writing it down. So journaling is a very, very powerful way of releasing what you're carrying within yourself. And there are many methods of journaling. Just choose one that you think would work for you. Start doing that. Another thing, if you don't have the access for professional support, start writing down what you think you're going through and from where is it coming. And why is it? Also, most importantly, if you don't have the access, ask yourself, why don't you have the access yet? Is it because of finances? Is it because you feel you're not ready? Because for therapy and coaching, for healing, you will be never ready. And healing is a lifelong process.
Yeah.
So for healing, you will have to just take that step. You just need to take action. If you're on a waiting list, then obviously there should be some sort of support groups in your area. Connect with people who are going through similar situation. That can be helpful as well. Make sure that you're talking to people that that are from the same community or people that are going through something similar. Yeah.
I think where you said earlier about the journaling, I think that's really important. I mean, I love journaling, and I think that people don't realize the impact it makes to your prefrontal cortex. It actually, because our brain is malleable, it actually rewires your mind as well. Yeah. And that emphasis on reflection. Thank you so much for sharing that. And finally, Nida, if someone listening feels ready for change but unsure where to begin, what is the first courageous step?
If you have the awareness already, see, having the awareness is already something that you should be grateful for, because not everybody has the awareness of that they need help. Okay, so awareness is very, very important. If you have that, do not wait long. Start seeking out help. Start looking for coaches, therapists that can help you with whatever you're going through.
Absolutely. And that's, again, very powerful. I think, again, taking action, it's not about things being perfect and aligned all the time. It's just having that self-awareness can change everything. And such a strong way to end as well, Nida. You're reframing awareness as a gift, not something to sit on, but something to act on. And what you're encouraging is momentum. If the door has opened in someone's mind, that's the moment to step through it and not delay at all. So Nida, thank you so much for such a powerful and insightful conversation. Today we've explored something many people sense but don't always have the language for, that and that lasting transformation happens when we gently and intentionally work beneath the surface. And where you were talking about healing, yes, it's a lifetime, but we're healing every day, and people don't realize that a part of our learning process is a healing process as well. So thank you to everyone listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio today as well. But Nida, if people wanted to reach out and connect with you, where can they find you?
They can contact me on Instagram, ltc.therapist.
Okay, that's great. And if this episode resonated, do share it with someone who may benefit. We're closing today's episode with Unstoppable by Sia, a reminder that strength often rises from within, especially when we decide to do the deeper work. Until next time, take care of your mind, your heart, and your well-being.
Smiles, I know what it takes to fool this town. I'll do it till the sun goes down and all through the night time. Oh yeah, oh yeah. I'll tell you what you wanna hear. Get my sunglasses on while I shed a tear. It's never the right time. Yeah, yeah, yeah.